Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the No Nonsense of Tennessee Titans podcast. I'm your host, Matthias Wadner. Here, as always, with my co-host, Will Lomas. We are here to talk about the Titans' season and how it ended and talk about their future as a franchise going into the offseason. They ended up losing their win and end game against the Jaguars, which at this point feels like forever ago, honestly. It happened only a week ago, I think. It feels like so much has happened since then. But they end up losing that game. They go on a 7-game losing streak to end the season in brutal fashion. I mean, 7-3 record to 7-10 is not unheard of. I think it's happened before. I assume it's happened before. But just a rough stretch, and ends up with the Titans out of the playoffs and with their future very much in limbo. The good news is that they'll have the 11th overall pick in the draft, and we'll talk about their plan for the draft in a little bit and probably in future episodes. But, Will, what were your thoughts after that game? I'll be honest, like, a part of me, once John Robinson got fired and it seemed like the Titans were, like, in a really bad place as a team during this losing streak, I was just like, you know what, let's just lose out, get a better pick in the draft and try to, you know, rebuild going into the future. But once this game came around, it was a win and in, keeping the Jaguars from the playoffs. I was like, you know what, man, I want to win this. Like, Josh Dobbs at quarterback, sign me up. I'm in. I'm putting on my Titans hat again. Let's win. Let's get to the playoffs. Who knows what can happen. But then just pure heartbreak, which is what we've come to expect from the Titans with that fumble return for touchdown after Josh Dobbs had played a really good game outside of that deep interception that he had. I can't remember who he targeted, but yeah, it was just a very sour end to that game and to the season. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think both of us at different times had talked about how it, whether it was 3 games into the losing streak or 5 games or whatever, it just felt like the team had just any sort of hope they had of doing anything in the playoffs just disappeared. Because, you know, losing to Nico Autry for 4 weeks or whatever, that sucks, but you can get over it. You know, Tannehill in the middle of the season, like when you have 7 wins stacked up, it's like, that sucks, but you can, you know, you can figure it out as long as you get him back. And then you go through and it's like Ben Jones, another concussion, you know, same thing. Nate Davis, that's, you know, it's like, and you go David Long, I think missed the last 5 games of the year. So it's like, you have these guys and you're like, well, you know, if those guys can come back, the same thing we were telling ourselves last year. So you kind of talk yourself in, because, you know, I don't care what anybody says. When this team is healthy, and I know it's impossible to remember that because the last 2 years they have, depending on who you ask, it's either the player's fault and they just haven't committed themselves enough to staying healthy, or it's the training staff and they're just, you know, not bad at their jobs. But whoever you want to blame, they just haven't been out there. But the roster entering the season was a talented roster, and it was last year too. And you know, they were much more talented than this. So when you talk about getting guys back from injury and, you know, whether you like Mike Vrabel or not, like, he does seem to get guys to perform if they have to step up and fill in. Like, I don't know how much he elevates them long term, but he does give you those passable games from guys like Chris Jackson and Trey Avery and, you know, Gibbons and, you know, like, just those guys that, you know, we see the Titans plug in. So it felt like, okay, they can, you know, they can maybe make a run. But honestly, like, the second that the game was over, well, I'll say the second after Jeffrey Simmons had his emotional, like, post-game kind of conversation with the media where he talked about getting his ankle shot up since week 8, like, as soon as I was done being, you know, kind of heartbroken for him, you realize how much of a blessing it is. Like, and we can talk about Todd Downing in a second, but I'm not convinced that the Titans go into this offseason with the open mind and with the clarity that they need if they win any of those games and if they make the playoffs. Like, this felt very much like a team that if they kept winning, things were going to keep getting covered up and things were going to keep getting, you know, there was going to be more and more excuses instead of results. And you either disagree or you don't, you know, at this point. Like, everybody's got their opinion. Based on everything we've seen Vrabel and company do, I expected them to just run it back if they made it in the playoffs. But that's not what happened because they had the second worst losing streak in Tennessee Titans history, if I remember correctly. So luckily, they completely failed instead of partially failing. And now they end up with the 11th pick. You know, there's clarity about some guys who didn't stay healthy, like Bud Dupree. And, you know, those guys where they were kind of, you could tell their impact when they were on the field, but they needed a strong season to kind of convince everybody to say, okay, you're worth the money that you're going to make compared to what we could use that for. And so there's a clarity to it when you lose 7 in a row that sort of helps and makes the offseason easier. But more important than anything, just getting rid of Todd Downing is a massive win. I mean, it's more important than going to the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, well, I didn't mention it, but as you just mentioned it, Todd Downing obviously got fired, as every Titans fan knows. Keith Carter, the offensive line coach, also got fired. So did Anthony Midgett, the secondary coach, and Eric Frazier, who I think was offensive skill assistant, whatever that means. I don't know. But those are the guys that are out from the coaching staff for now. There could be more changes. Personally, I think the special teams coach has to leave. But you know what? He's always dealing with players that aren't even supposed to be on the team to begin with. So I guess he could get a little bit of a pass for that. But thankfully, Downing is gone. I think he should have been gone a year ago. Same with Carter. Like, we've talked about Carter. I think we only thought he was a good coach after he who were the tackle? I can't even remember. It was Kevin Pamphile at right tackle.
No. Pamphile was a ghost. It was Dennis Kelly and and it was Cimbrello at first, and then it was Questenberry left. Which is looking back on it, like, you know, Dennis Kelly, like, I still would argue that he's fine, but clearly he's worse than what Arthur Smith was able to kind of create for him. And Cimbrello's out of the NFL completely because he got fed up with Keith Carter. And Questenberry is like a backup for the Bills who's not very good, who was terrible. Like, it's one of those things where you think a guy's, like you said, like, we thought he was a passable coach after, you know, 2 or 3 bad years to start. And then you look back on it, you're like, no, that was somebody else doing all the heavy lifting and making those guys look better.
Yeah, I mean, who developed under him? Nate Davis for like a season, maybe?
Think about it. Yeah, it's like last year was like his most disappointing year. And we were like, oh, yeah, skinnier in camp now. Like, he's going to, you know, he's going to make a big impact. And he was, you know, he was good. Like, he was good. But, you know, he's injured, you know, again, riddled with injuries. And I'm sure part of that is because he got down to a smaller weight, and guys who are bigger that get down to a smaller weight seem to get injured more. And that's not a scientific study, but that, you know, everybody seems to get injured more when you look at the Titans, but that feels like something that happens a lot is when guys try to change the size that they naturally are at. For whatever reason, they end up dealing with more injuries or they don't have the same explosion or whatever. So when he was playing, he was good. But, you know, again, he missed injuries. But even then, like, I don't know that he's as good as he was in 2020. Like, that was the year he should have been in the Pro Bowl.
That was his best year for sure. Yeah. Yeah. I no one developed under him. And, like, we can call out Vrabel all we want for, you know, Raiden's not starting, but I'm sure Keith Carter had a lot of input in those decisions as well. I'm sure Vrabel trusted him to make the right evaluations in terms of offensive linemen and who should be playing and who should be playing where. And every time Keith Carter got asked about Raiden's, he was like, oh, he's a guard. He's absolutely a guard. But every time he's played tackle, he's fine. So I don't know. I think there's a lot of blame to go around it, and him getting fired really wasn't too much of a shock. And there was always miscommunications no matter who was in there, especially in pass protection. Like, it was bad. They needed to make a change there, no doubt. Obviously the biggest change is Todd Downing getting fired. Well, let's talk about Midget. I don't know, we don't really have to talk about Anthony Midget too much, but similar to Carter in the offensive line, there was too many miscommunications in the secondary. And I know there was a lot of turnover, a lot of defensive backs coming in and out due to these injuries and due to other factors. But the secondary it sucked, man. Like, it was not good this year. And there was still talent there for most of the season, at least. But, man, they were getting cooked at a pretty consistent level. And even in this Jaguars game, they were letting guys run free. So, I mean, no one really developed either. I would say McCreary he wasn't great this year, and I didn't see any improvement over the course of the season. I mean, I think the Midget thing was fair. Obviously, I don't want anyone to lose their job, except for Todd Downing, because, you know, whatever. But, yeah, let's talk a little bit about Downing. I mean, we've talked about him so much this year. I don't know what else we could say, but yeah, I think the blessing in disguise to the Titans missing the playoffs is that Downing got fired immediately and the Titans can take their offense in a new direction, or at the very least, if Vrabel and the new GM want to keep up this run first type of mentality, which I think is a bad idea. I don't think that's how you win in the NFL. But if they do want to keep that going, at the very least, get an offensive coordinator who has any feel for play calling and actually understands the rhythms of the game, because Todd Downing had just nothing, man, just nothing. He would have a good drive with good play calling, a good balance of, you know, running, play action slants, you know, that kind of stuff. And then the next drive, he would come out with these, you know, Malik Willis end around trick plays, just the worst timing, the worst feel for when to call certain plays, for when to run the ball, when to pass the ball, and the predictability of just run, pass, or run, punt, or running on first down every single time, even though the box is like 9 defenders crowded. I'm glad that's done. I don't think the next offensive coordinator could be worse. I really don't.
Yeah, it'd be tough. I mean, he
was worse than Robiskie, right?
Like, yeah, I think yeah, so. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because Robiskie had teams that weren't particularly talented. Like, you know, this is a team that over the last 2 years at different points has had Derrick Henry, A.J. Brown, Julio Jones, Chigakonkwo, Treylon Burks. They had Josh Reynolds, who's a perfectly capable number two or three receiver in Detroit, you know, one of the best offenses in the NFL, but they couldn't find a spot for him here because he didn't play special teams or whatever that deal was. You know, like, you know, Hilliard's been there, who Hilliard was good, you know, this year when given chances. But it's just like, for the last 2 years, just painstakingly predictable. Like, you know, everybody knows first downs are runs. We've talked about that. You know, for the last 18 months, I've said all you have to do is blitz on run blitz on first down, and you may be wrong once, but you won't be wrong twice. And then you got the Titans in second and 12, and you know they, you know that they don't like to pass it anyway, so they might just run it again. You know, so it, they just constantly put themselves behind the eight ball. And beyond that, it's like if Nick Westbrook-Ikhine's out there, if Derrick Henry's out there, specifically if Derrick Henry's out there, you know it's probably a run. But if Dontrell Hilliard or Haskins is out there, you definitely know it's a pass. So, you know,
which it shouldn't be, because Haskins was such a good runner in college, and you would think, like, the offensive coordinator should at least, like, give the defense the possibility that he might run. But it's just no. Like, it's no. So frustrating.
Like, and everybody's like, well, you know, it's about the Jimmys and Joes, not the X's and O's, which, you know, that, like, there's something to that. Like, you've got to have, you know, it hurts when you've got a historic number of injuries. But the problem is, it's not that – it's different when the other team knows what you're calling. Because when the other team knows what you're calling and they're not the most injured team in the country, you know, or in the NFL, that puts you at a disadvantage. And it's hard to go out there with a disadvantage every single game. You know, and then you get – eventually you end up with one of the worst players of their position. And, you know, last year it was Questenberry, who would have been a big upgrade over Dennis Daly this year, who was the absolute worst player in the NFL at left tackle. And probably over the last few years, I mean, I'm not telling you anything y'all don't know. I mean, y'all know he was terrible. But, you know, once you're that predictable and you have those injuries, like – you know, there's only so many times you can blame the Titans and say, well, Tannehill only had 250 yards passing. And it's like, yeah, but look at what happened to Malik Willis. Like, there's a reason why the stats were so underwhelming, is because it takes and Dobbs did well enough. But it's like it takes a very veteran mind to understand, OK, no matter what happens, you've got one, maybe two reads, and then check it down or get ready to get sacked, because you know Dennis Daly is your left tackle. And sometimes you have to roll the dice because you know you need a 12-yard gain. But, I mean, that's basically what you're dealing with. So you've got a defense that knows when they can pin their ears back against the worst left tackle in the NFL. And you know when they need to watch Derrick Henry. And they don't really get punished when they cheat. And you know that they're cheating, but, you know, your offensive play caller can't figure out a way to stop it. So, that, you know, personnel decisions – in terms of who was out in the field, stupid. Splitting up reps the way he did, stupid. Trying to constantly say, well, we need a balanced attack and we have to spread the ball around, because if you focus too much on one guy, then the defense keys on it, stupid. You know, his general understanding of what play calling should be in the NFL was high school level at best. And, you know, he knows it. I mean, there's no chance he looks back at this season and thought, well, I did everything I could do. You know, he knows he disappointed, and, you know, fans should not feel sorry for him. He got 2 years. The team stuck with him after he got a DUI in the middle of the season, when they had every right to fire him or do whatever. They stuck by him foolishly, and they never won a game again. So, you know, there's nobody to blame here but him. And I don't know if we're in a situation where it's like, well, it can't get worse, but it certainly can get much, much, much better. You know, like, I don't know what's worse. I would tend to think that there's no offensive coordinator in the NFL who's as bad at their job as Todd Downing was, but I'm not eager to find that out. You know, I'm not going to seek out the worst offensive caller in the NFL. The good news is the odds are that you're going to get a better play caller, and it's probably even or better than even odds that you're going to get a much better play caller, which is huge for a team that has talented players that they just need upgrades at certain positions.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if the scheme was all that bad. Like, some of it made sense at least, but yeah, his play calling, just no feel for the personnel that was out there, the personnel that was on defense, like, just terrible. But whatever, that's over. First of all, I don't know how to phrase this, but do you think Tim Kelly is probably the odds-on favorite to take over that, or I haven't really seen anything in terms of outside coordinator hires. I don't know if maybe I missed some news, but I really haven't seen too much yet. Do you think it's going to be Tim Kelly, or do you think they would go outside of the organization?
I don't think that they're afraid to look outside of the organization. There hadn't been any names pop up, and historically they have been very much promote from within. But I've the optimist in me says that both Amy Adams Strunk and Vrabel know that's a bad decision. But the realist in me knows that at the very least, Amy Adams Strunk says you got to do something different, and so they have to at least entertain outside ideas. So. We'll see.
There's I'm wondering that if they're going to wait to hire a GM before making an offensive coordinator decision.
I think that's what they do. Like I don't know if there's any like, I guess theoretically you want everybody on the same page, but free agencies doesn't start for 2 months. You know, you don't have to make any decisions about any of that for a little bit, and you know. I guess the optimistic way to read it is that Vrabel's not ruling anything out. Like Vrabel, if a GM comes in and says, I want to run an offense that throws the ball 70% of the time, that he's, you know, theoretically okay with that change if he can be proven why. Because if not, just promote a guy from within. And really, that's the story of this offseason, is whenever the Titans choose to promote somebody from within, I believe it's a move where Vrabel says, okay, that guy agrees with what we did last year and what I've done, you know, my career here. They're going to stay in power instead of bringing somebody else in who might change that. And that's, you know, that's not a negative. I mean, it is a negative, but it's not anything like that's just Mike Vrabel specific. Every head coach and every GM want as much power as they can get. It's just the nature of the business. So I don't blame Vrabel because he's always had control of his staff. But I think that if they promote from within, you're going to see a very similar offense to what you saw last year. I think you're going to get, you know, 29 passes a game from your quarterback, which is, you know, about 7 less than the NFL average. So it's like 70-80% of the NFL average. Then you're going to see a more run heavy game. And then you're going to be frustrated because there's going to be some situations where, by the very definition of that breakdown, that it's going to be some plays where it's just run, pass. And that's going to be awful. And it's going to result the way we think it will. But we just have to hope that it's less frequently than Todd Downing did it. But I do think that Kelly is somebody that Vrabel thought of highly in the past and wanted to interview for the offensive coordinator job. I don't know if he still thinks that way, because I think there would be a lot more rumbling about him being the guy to beat, just because it would be easy to get that story if you're like an insider. Like, it seems like they would want that out there, that even if they get a new GM, they want, you know, they want Kelly because this blah blah blah. So I would say he's the favorite, but you know, there's several names out there that could be interesting. I mean, I've read everything, and this is from like Sports Illustrated. Like, it's not like, you know, a tweet, but like, I've read everything from, you know, Cliff Kingsbury could be enticing because of Mike Vrabel's background as a college coach, and I cannot possibly see a pair that would get along worse than those two. And then there's the LaFleur stuff, you know, Mike LaFleur from the Jets, who gets a lot of talk. And then there's the Bill O'Brien rumors where, you know, like, let's say the world flips completely upside down. And, you know, as of recording this, Will Levis's odds to be the number one pick have gone from like 22-1 to like 7-1, you know, just, which is a crazy overnight drop. So that's strange. So let's say the world goes crazy and every Titans fan's fantasy comes true and the Colts trade up to 1 and get Corey or get a Will Levis. Well, now all of a sudden, okay, can you trade up to number 2 to get Bryce Young? And like, if that's your plan, do you make Bill O'Brien your offensive coordinator because he works with him at Alabama? Like, as much as we hate the words Bill O'Brien, it's not like the guy doesn't know how to call an offense. Like, he does. It's just, he also kind of wants to trade Hopkins for a second round pick. So, you know, you kind of have to think about all those rumors and figure out which ones you trust and which ones you don't. Right now, I think that the plan, at least the obvious plan, is they're being very open and a lot of details are getting out about when they're interviewing GM candidates and who they're talking to and all that. So it seems like that is the number one priority. And then whether they pull those guys and say, hey, you know, if you had to hire an offensive coordinator right now, what would your top three guys be? Because that's what I would be doing. If I was Mike Vrabel or Amy Adams Strunk, I would be saying, okay, you know, have those guys in and say, okay, just to get a figure, like, and feel how much of the same page we're on, you give me your top three names for offensive coordinator that you believe would come here to work under you and with Mike Vrabel. And then let them talk and then write the names down and figure out, you know, is that somebody who would fit with our style? Or, you know, do these guys just completely not get the team that we have? Like that kind of thing. And there's, like I said, there's value to that. But at the very least, I think they want to get through this first wave of GM interviews before they decide anything else.
Yeah, that all makes sense. I would like for them to hire an offensive coordinator that's at least a little bit more pass centric, or at least has a good idea of a functioning passing game and can draw up concepts that will take advantage of the talent that the Titans have. Because as much as we like to talk about how bad their wide receiver depth is, Treylon Burks is good. Robert Woods is still good. He's showed flashes. At least Kyle Phillips, when he's healthy, has been a good player. And Chigakonkwo looks like one of the most promising young tight ends in the league. Plus, Dontrell Hilliard is a really impressive pass catcher out of the backfield. So there's stuff there to work with. And I think the Titans can take advantage of it, especially with Derrick Henry getting older and older. He had a good season. Like, it's not like Henry's slowing down per se, but we do have to take into account that he's about to enter his age 31 season, I think. Is it 30 or 31? I think he's 30 right now. No, he's 29. I think he's 29. Yeah.
I think he's older than – I always think, I'm like, oh, because remember, I think it was the Patriots game, the playoff game, where it was his birthday that day, and they were like, congratulations on turning 26. And like, that was back when it was like all the running backs like drop off a cliff at 27. And we were like, oh no. So it's felt like he's like 40 for the last like 2 years.
Yeah, it's true. And it's so dumb that we like 29 is like, oh, he's still got it. But 30, oh man, he's about to start sucking, but it doesn't work that way. And Derrick Henry's obviously a unicorn. So he still could very well have, you know, 3 to 4 years of good football left. We'll see, but I still would like the Titans to lean more on the passing game going forward, especially if they're going to have a quarterback of the future, either in this draft or the next one. We'll see. But for now, let's take a quick ad break, and we'll come back and talk a little bit about the draft, some of the GM candidates that the Titans are interviewing, and some of the free agents that the Titans will have to make decisions on.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom. noom.com and check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Welcome back into No Nonsense, the Tennessee Titans podcast. We've talked about it a little bit that the Titans have already begun interviewing GM candidates. I believe today or yesterday, the Titans completed their interviews with the in-house candidates, Ryan Cowden and Monty Austinfort. I think Cowden is probably the odds-on favorite, but, you know, anything can happen. They could be swayed by some of these outside guys. Some of these outside guys that they're interviewing are Rand Carthon from the San Francisco 49ers, Glenn Cook from the Cleveland Browns, Ian Cunningham from the Bears, Quentin Harris from the Cardinals, and a TBD, Malik Boyd from the Bills. They still haven't scheduled an interview with him, I don't believe, but he seems to be on their radar. I'm not going to pretend to know who these guys are, and I'm not really familiar with all of their work. I think Quentin Harris used to be was he a cornerback? He sounds like it.
Safety, I think.
I've seen him play before. The other guys, I'm not totally sure, but initially, like, I would say go for Malik Boyd or Rand Carthon from, you know, the Bills and the Niners, just because I like the way they've built their rosters, and those guys have played a big part in constructing those rosters because they're, you know, pro player personnel directors. So I would sway towards that. I don't know if that's always the best move. And I've seen people say, like, you know, it's not always the smartest to just go for a person from the best teams in the NFL. I don't know. I mean, I feel like it's a good blueprint to copy. I mean, I love the way the rosters of both of those teams are set up. I would prefer the Bills type of blueprint. I just like the way they've built that. The 49ers probably make more sense because they're a run-centric type of offense, and they have offensive skill position players who are really good after the catch, and that's kind of what the Titans could and should be. But how do you see it? Do you have a favorite amongst those, or maybe someone else that hasn't been mentioned yet?
Yeah, so I wrote an article today about Rand Carthon because I went into it thinking I was really going to like him as a potential general manager, and somebody said before that when you look at a team that has gotten the most out of their talent and who seems to understand how to consistently hire good coaches, it's the 49ers. Like, you look at Saleh and I forget the list, but there's
D'Amico Ryans.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, they're like stacked up like that. And, like, you know, they just seem to have a really good, you know, they outperform what they should. And that's even with talented players. Like, I think in the last four seasons, they've had three with double-digit wins, and the one that they didn't is when Garoppolo got hurt or something crazy like that. But, you know, I went in, and I was kind of underwhelmed with his career because he's a guy who's almost exclusively on the pro side of things, and he deals with free agency and all that, and the Titans' biggest problem hasn't necessarily been free agency. It's been hitting on first round draft picks, which they've been hit or miss with. And, you know, you go back and he's been a director of player personnel, which is different than a director of pro personnel, because a player personnel recommends things or does the draft and free agency for the general manager and kind of presents info and, you know, is the right hand man. And he did that for 7 years, and the Pro Bowlers he was involved in drafting were Aaron Donald, great, Jared Goff, okay, and Todd Gurley. And, you know, Aaron Donald, awesome. But people forget that he was the second pick they had in that draft. Like, they didn't pick him number two when they had the second overall pick. They picked Greg Robinson, who was one of the biggest busts at offensive tackle in NFL history. And if they had known what Aaron Donald was going to become, they absolutely would have spent the second pick on him, or they would have traded both those picks to get to one to get him, or they would have traded down knowing that he wasn't going to go two through four or whatever. But they wouldn't have rolled the dice and possibly let him slip. And, you know, they ended up with him, so they still get points for that. But, you know, it's not quite as good as you'd want it. And then every other pick that, I mean, including those, every other pick that he's been involved in making has been a top 13 pick. And you've got guys like Tavon Austin, Robinson, like I just talked about, Trey Lance, who they traded up for, which, you know, Trey Lance may be good one day, but, you know, it'll be his third season next year. And he's had, you know, went on IR, I think the first week of the season this year, and didn't do enough to convince everybody that he should start over Garoppolo last year. So, and Brock Purdy looks really good. So, you know, I have some concerns about whether that would actually solve any of the problems that the Titans were having, or whether that would just maintain status quo and just end us up back here in the same spot in however many years. But Cunningham is a guy who, he's the guy who I've looked into, who there seems to be the most out there about. And he seems like a guy that of all the guys, he's the one that I would be most excited about, just because I think he's 36, 39. He's really young. But he spent time with Ozzie Newsome and the Ravens as their SEC scout, which, you know, I believe almost every year, Ozzie Newsome would draft somebody from the SEC in the first round. Like, and it's no surprise that they're the best conference in college football, and that, you know, they produce the most NFL talent, and the Ravens were consistently one of the best teams in the NFL. But, you know, that's a very valued position when you say, okay, if we're going to commit to drafting people out of this conference, and especially out of Alabama, where Ozzie Newsome was from, then, and where, you know, he knew Nick Saban, you know, we've got to hit on these picks and we've got to get the right guy. And more often than not, they did. And then after that, he went to Philadelphia, which, you know, Philadelphia, but even before the team they have now, had won the Super Bowl. Like, I mean, that they've been a good team. They've just also had to deal with having Carson Wentz, which has been a problem. So, you know, once they got over that, they kind of meandered in the middle of the pack. And then now they're back to, you know, being in contention again. So, that's two teams with strong front offices that have won Super Bowls in the last 20 years and, you know, that seem to be very good learning grounds for future general managers. And now he's with the Bears, and he's only been with the Bears for a year. So, you know, it's not like, you know, it's not like he's responsible for any of the losses that they've had. Like, this wasn't a good roster coming into the year, and now they have the first overall pick, and not, you know, not really through any fault that they have. They were kind of dealt the hand they were dealt. So, and I think people are somewhat positive about what the Bears will be going forward, but, you know, it's too early to tell how impactful he's been or could be there, because it's only 1 year as the right-hand man. But if this is where I struggle with it, though, because he's the guy I think would be the most interesting and has the most upside. But the press release, once the Titans had their season ended and they wanted to put out good PR before the press conference to end the season and all that and whatever. So they released an article about what the Titans were looking for in a general manager. And, you know, Amy Adams Drunk had quotes in there and stuff, and everybody talked about how I think collaboration is the word. I always get it confused with cooperation, but I think it was collaboration. And they talked about how this general manager needed to collaborate and how Mike Vrabel would no longer respond to the general manager. He would respond directly to Amy Adams Strunk, and, you know, read into that however you will. But another, the thing I thought was interesting is she pointed out how when she looks, when they're looking for a general manager, they want somebody who's proven to be exceptional at drafting, exceptional at free agency and all that kind of stuff, which tells me that they need to have experience in both sides, and they need to have a fair amount of experience and tangible results to say, look, I was the right-hand man with a successful organization, and I, you know, had my toes in both waters, but these are the guys I stood on the table for that we signed, and these are the guys I stood on the table for that we drafted. And I don't know that either of the guys I've mentioned really have that sort of pedigree. So I don't know. Like, I say all that to say, like, you know, people don't love the Browns because Glenn Cook is the guy from the Browns. But last year they traded for Amari Cooper, and they traded a fifth and a sixth and got him, which was an incredible deal for them. And, you know, they had to give up the farm to get Deshaun Watson. And I don't think anybody listening to this podcast thinks that that was a moral move or the right move to make. But
they've drafted well. They've drafted well, yeah, in the past couple of years.
Yeah, like, I mean, they're not that far removed from being a team that won zero games. And, you know, now it's a disappointment when they don't make the playoffs because they do have talent on their roster. So, you know, and if you want to look at a team that's kind of built an offensive line and a running game that the Titans would like to have, I mean, they have a really nice running game. So I say all that to say I don't really know, but I do like the candidates that they have, even though there might not be one that just blows my socks off.
Yeah, I'll be honest. Like, I mean, while you've been talking, I've been doing a little bit of research myself, and I've also listened to what you've said. And I like this crop of candidates that they've gotten, especially the outside ones. Like, I don't mind Ryan Cowden and Monty Austin for it, but do you think they'll be that much different than John Robinson? Well, maybe that's good because we like John Robinson. Yeah. So maybe we should get one of them instead of hiring from the outside. But I think that whatever they do, I think they're probably going to get a good candidate and a good talent evaluator for the most part. So I think they're in a good position overall. I'm still, you know, where John Robinson stands on this podcast. So I feel like whoever comes in is going to have pretty big shoes to fill. Like, I know John Robinson made a lot of mistakes, but he made a lot of smart decisions. He drafted a lot of good players as well. So I think they have big shoes to fill, and they're going to come in with a lot of pressure because Amy Adams Strunk clearly wants to win as soon as possible. And if this new GM comes in and already makes, you know, a couple of bad free agent signings or his draft picks come in and they get injured, like all of our draft picks seem to get injured, then I don't know, like pressure might start mounting pretty quickly. So they're in a tough position, but from what I've seen, what I've read, it seems like they have a good pool to choose from. But it really is going to be important for Amy Adams Strunk to hire the right person, and I hope they do, because it's going to probably end up being the difference between the Titans taking the next step or just I don't think they're going to float in mediocrity. Like, if it goes bad, it's going to go really bad, I think, personally. Hopefully it doesn't, but we'll see. Damn, there's a lot to talk about, honestly. Let's table the GM conversation for now. Until the next one. Well, the GM is going to come in and he's going to have decisions to make. The Titans have a lot of free agents coming up. I kind of want to just go by them one by one, and we can kind of decide whether we want to keep them or not. It could be pretty quick. Are you up for that, Will?
Sure.
Let's do it. I'm going to go by, I guess, the highest paid tight ends that are upcoming free agents this offseason. So, Austin Hooper.
Yeah, so, I'll try to make it quick since we've got so many to go through. I like Hooper a lot, but this draft class is going to be packed with tight ends, and they kind of found Hooper last year in free agency because the Browns kind of cut him late in that first second-ish wave, and they picked him up. So I'm going to say no just because I want the offense. If there's going to be a tight end on the field, I want it to be Chig, and I want the offensive coordinator to be able to find a way to make him the guy who's always on the field.
That's fair. I would bring him back. I really like him. I think he's a really good tight
he's
end.
Good.
And he,
like,
I know.
He's good, man. It's just hard because it's like they're dealing with so, like, and look, they can make money, and I get that. But it's like I keep finding myself where I'm like, is there a situation where in an ideal world I want Mike Vrabel to be given the opportunity to say, well, Chig isn't blocking well enough, so we put Austin out there. And that's why, you know, because he may have, you know, 4 for 40 and 4 first downs, and that's awesome. But he's not he looked like a guy who's going to have a single pass that goes for 40 yards. And Chig did that twice with very minimal involvement in the offense this year. And he had several 30 yards. So it's just it's so hard for me because I want to take the toys that I don't want to see Mike Vrabel in, like, forced to be on the field. I want to take them away from him so he can't play with them. Like, I don't want Swain, and I like Hooper, but I'm afraid he would get too many snaps over Chig. But having said that, I like Hooper. I think he did a good job.
Yeah, I thought he was great over the back half of the season, and I personally would like him back as long as they get him on a pretty friendly contract, just because I think him and Okonkwo would be just a fantastic duo. But I agree with your points, and I see where you're coming from. Next would be Jeff Swaim. That's a no. I don't think we have to talk about that one. Next would be A.J. Moore. Did he play?
Yeah.
Did he play this year?
I think he got hurt. Like, I think he got hurt in the Bills game. Like, I think he, like, one of the bajillion guys who, like, went down a kickoff or something, and then we just never heard about him again.
Yeah, $2.5 million too. That's pretty expensive. Lonnie Johnson. I think I would take him. I would bring him back.
Yeah, he's fine. I mean, like, that's fine. I've got no problem with him.
Morgan Cox, all pro. I think he was an all pro or maybe second team all pro. Long snapper.
Yeah. Go ahead. I mean, sure. Like, go ahead, bring him back. Like, he's from the area. Like, it doesn't seem like it's a physical toll to be a long snapper. So, yeah. So, it'll keep him as long as he wants to play.
Yeah. DeMarcus Walker.
That's tricky because, yeah, I mean, like, you want him back, but, like, what's it going to cost?
Yeah,
I don't know if he ended up leading the Titans in sacks or if he was half a sack short. You know, it was one of those. But, like, I mean, it was him, Autry, and Simmons were all kind of hovering around together. And if you're going to cut Bud Dupree, which, you know, we may talk about later, whatever. But, like, if that's going to be part of the plan, then using some of that money to bring back Walker, if possible, is a really good way to open up cap space and stay relatively the same at the position.
Yeah, I think if you get him on a friendly deal, I think you bring him back because you get pretty cheap production from him. He played well whenever he was called upon. Next is Dontrell Hilliard.
Yes, I bring him back. Like,
I would bring him back too. Mike, I don't think he's going to go for a lot.
Mike Keith kind of, like, you know, and look, I'm overanalyzing everything because, you know, this is the time when people are being their most honest selves. But Mike Keith kind of acted like, can you get more, like, can you get a running back who does a little bit more in the running game than Hilliard does? And I don't think that was a Hilliard thing. I think that was a Downing thing, because we've seen Hilliard get the ball plenty last year when Henry was hurt. And people forget how explosive
he was. Over 5 yards a carry. Like, he's good in the run game. He should have gotten more touches.
Absolutely. So, yeah, like I would like to have him back. And it's not because I don't like Haskins. I think Haskins is fine. But we don't need Julius Chestnut. We don't need all these other guys who were just fun for Mike Keith to say. Like, get Hilliard back, because I want to say he led the team in touchdown receptions. And get him back, and then get a coordinator who knows how to use him.
Trenton Cannon, I don't think we need to talk about. Like, I don't even know if he played.
Nope, fake name.
Yeah, okay. Dylan Cole, fan favorite, who turned into, you know, no one liked him anymore after the Trevor Lawrence play.
Yeah, after he, like, cried, like, which, you know, like, whatever. Like, I'm not trying to rag on the guy, but it was like, I should have done more and all that. Like, yeah, I mean, like,
I would bring it back. I he was fine.
Yeah, if he wanted him to be your very last special team guy, okay, that's fine. But, I mean, was he better than Gibbons? Was he better than Monty Rice? Like, no. Like, is he better than David Long, who we'll have to talk about in a second and figure that out? No, like, I don't think there was a notable, you know, thing that he did on defense to make him anything other than a special teams player, though.
Monty Rice did some things, man. I kind of like him. I like
He's good. Points. Yeah, he's like, this is going to be one of those things where we look back at that, you know, that 2020-2021 class that everybody kind of shames Robinson over, and everybody talks about how terrible it is. And it's like, well, actually, they got Christian Fulton, Monty Rice, Rashad Weaver. Like, it's like there's going to be like a whole bunch of guys
that
came from that class. And it's like, oh, whoops. Like, they got Tier Tart in that class. Like, it's going to be like a little bit of thing, but that's whatever.
Yeah, I agree. Next up is Terrence Mitchell. I mean, no.
No.
Mario Edwards, kind of similar to Walker, although I thought Walker was more productive.
Yeah.
Corey Levin, you would say yes, of course.
Yeah, he should be the starter at center next year.
Right?
Genuinely, legitimately. Like, if you watch him play, especially if you watch him versus Dallas, like, I mean, I'm not saying he's Ben Jones, like, it's just a couple of games, like, I, you know, blah, blah, blah. But he is much better than Brewer was at center. And Brewer's fine. I mean, like, Brewer, you know, if Brewer's backup center, okay. Like, but Levin should be the starter, you know. And I made this point to Tic Tac Titan the other day, Tyler. And I said, you know, you're going to need some cheap stopgap guys. And he's one of the few that could not only be a cheap stopgap guy, but he's young enough to where you could actually find a average to slightly above average long-term starter, and it won't break the bank, and it's at a position that you need. So, like, they may have stumbled into the guy who should start for him next year. Now, you know, we got a long way to go between now and training camp and figuring out, you know, if he's going to be the option, but he absolutely deserves to be brought back to at least compete for one of those jobs.
I don't want to make this too long, but do you think you think they're going to cut Ben Jones?
I think he's going to retire.
Yeah, it feels that way. Yeah.
Like, coming out, like, in the Jaguars game, like, because it wasn't like he was there with LaJuan and Harold Landry and all that. It was, to my knowledge, he was the only player on IR who was there. And so, like, that, to me, if two concussions, you know, in the back half of the season, you know, like, if that's not a big enough red flag, the fact that he walked out there with the team and, like, you know, basically did his senior night thing in Jacksonville, like, that makes me feel like he doesn't come back. I mean, I would love for him to come back. You know, they're going to have to pay him some money either way, but if he retired, it would not surprise me at all.
Agreed. Next up is Joe Jones. I think that's a no. And Andrew Adams is next. This is an interesting one. I would bring it back. I thought he played really well in some of the spot starts.
Yeah, I would bring him back, depending on his kind of recovery and rehab and all that. But if I bring him back, I'm not bringing Lonnie Johnson back.
Yeah.
Just because I think they're kind of redundant, and I think Adams is better. But if you're worried that Adams won't be ready for the regular season or whatever, because I don't know how long a patella injury takes to recover from.
Oh, is that what's happening?
Yeah.
It's hard to keep track of all these injuries. So I don't even know.
You got to go through a filing cabinet to figure it out. But yeah, like I don't. That's just such a unfamiliar injury to me. I'm not off the top of my head. I don't know the recovery time of it. But you know, well, I say that, God, if the Titans medical team checked him out, that doesn't mean anything. He might be worse off than he was before. But they, God only knows if they're looking at the right picture. So you know, like. If an independent medical staff not affiliated with the Tennessee Titans cleared him or said that they expect him to be able to recover in time, then I would absolutely bring him back because Hooker and Byard are already locked in for years to come. So like if you're just like, we're going to get like, we need another safety, like you might want to churn, you know, the bottom of the draft and see if you can find somebody there. But it's not bad to have somebody who stepped in and showed he could be a starter if he needed to be, and also who could play sub-package linebacker and that kind of stuff.
Agreed. Next up, LaRaven Clark was fake player.
Yep.
Deshaun Hand, another fake. I didn't see him out there one time. Kevin Strong made more of an impact than Deshaun Hand did. Joshua Kalu, another one of these defensive backs who actually played pretty well.
I let him go because I think he.
Yeah, you could get his production from a draft pick from a sixth.
Yeah, it's like if you're gonna bring back Adams, like
yeah,
that you're already committing to paying three safeties more than more than what you would pay a draft pick, like. Just find the fastest, most athletic, you know, safety you can find on day three of the draft and just see what he can be, but hope that you never have to play him other than special teams.
Now we're going to get into the very interesting decisions. Nate Davis, are you paying him?
I am, just because, you know, the injuries he's had aren't ACL or Achilles or, like, the things that are really hard to recover from. And with this staff, if you can make it through two seasons without that, you know, you're an Iron Man. So it's just because also, like, what are you going to do? I mean, like, it's not like there's a ton of offensive linemen out there anyway, but, like, you know, we've seen them spend a lot of money on Roger Saffold, and that works. We've seen them spend a lot of money on Andy Levitre, and it didn't work. And, you know, who was the guy, Andrew Norwell, that the Jaguars paid $1 billion to a couple of years ago and he was terrible. And then they spent a bunch of money on Brandon Sheriff and he's fine, you know? So it's like moving a guard from one scheme to another is so hit or miss that if they admit that the offensive line was a problem, which is why Keith Carter got fired, then I'm bringing back Nate Davis and saying if he was average to above average with a guy that we've identified as a bad coach, put a good coach in there and hope that you can get more consistency or improve. And, you know, he's young, he's athletic, he's big, he understands what you want to do in the scheme that I would imagine they'll still try to run. So yeah, like I'm on board for signing him.
Next up, RFA Tier Tart. If he was a UFA, I would bring him back. No questions. I thought he was one of the best tight ends this entire season.
Yeah, like, you know, you can spend a lot of money in draft picks trying to find a nose tackle that can be that dancing bear, kind of, and they found it as an undrafted free agent, and he's been great, and, you know, he's always been a high-effort guy, but, like, he seems to have developed more, and now he's getting, you know, his hands up and knocking down passes, and he had that interception against the Colts, which is funny, and then, you know, more than anything else, Mike Vrabel and Shane Bowen trust him to be the one tech or, you know, the nose or whatever, playing the A gap. And that means that you can play Jeffrey Simmons as a three technique or a two, you know, you can play him. You don't have to worry about, okay, we're going to have to play him inside this time because we can't stop the run. Like, that opens up a lot of possibilities for you as Simmons is a pass rusher. So I think this whole defensive line complements each other well. And I think that Tart I think that he should be somebody that they focus on giving a new deal to almost more quickly than Jeffrey Simmons, just because, not because they have more time with Simmons. And I think there's a little bit more urgency to get a deal done with Tart, because I don't, you know, if they wanted to keep Jeff, they could exercise the fifth year option and tag him twice. Like, and that makes him a Titan for, you know, the next however many years. So, you know, I think that having both of them together is important.
Next up, Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, also an RFA. What would you do there?
I mean, it's such a weird player, right? Because everybody says, like, well, if he's your fifth best receiver, then you have a good offense. And that's true. But like I said with Hooper, like, I don't want to keep giving Mike Vrabel toys that I know he's going to play with. Like, I almost want to take Nick Westbrook-Ikhine off the team so that they don't keep trying to use him like a number two receiver, like Vrabel/Downing have done for the last 2 years, because he quote unquote knows all the positions. Like, you know, and you know, I say number two, like, they didn't really use him as a number two. They use him more as a number three. But the point is, like, they seem to feel like that's an okay situation where it's not like he's not a good receiver. He's a solid blocker, and that's cool. And he plays special teams, and that's cool. But that doesn't, you know, so do, you know, 30 fullbacks across the league. That doesn't mean that they should be one of your starting wide receivers. So as the team, you know, for as much as we've complained about getting faster, you know, Vrabel was like, we need to get faster, blah, blah, blah. Nothing Nick Westbrook-Ikhine does looks fast on a football field. Like, he doesn't create separation. He doesn't get yards after the catch. Like, none of that is there. So he's one of the first guys that has to come off the field if that's what you're wanting. So, no, I would give him the lowest tender, and then maybe you bring him back for one more season as a pure special teams player. But he's one of the guys that I'm not afraid of if I have to cut, like, on cut down day.
Yeah, I mean, if he asks for more than $2 million for a season, I'm saying no. I just feel like you can get his performance, his production from, you know, a fifth round receiver, personally. I mean, he was an undrafted free agent. You could probably get it from an undrafted agent. But yeah. Another receiver coming up, Cody Hollister, who is somehow an RFA. How is that? He's 30 years old.
Impossible. He is ageless. He exists outside of time and space.
Anyway, he can't possibly come back, yeah. Right? Yeah. Okay. Aaron Brewer, also RFA. This is an interesting one because, I mean, I think I would bring him back as a backup, but he really just cannot be your starter going into the year.
Yeah, I mean, I'm giving him, like, a low tender, and I'm just saying, look, like, the plan should be, okay, he's got experience at center and guard. He's a classic swing interior lineman. Like, you want him to play center because he knows how to snap. He's athletic enough to play guard for you in a pinch, but if other teams know he's there, you know, he's going to make the guys around him worse because it's going to be pretty easy to square up with him and beat him. So I don't mind him being there. I wouldn't bend over backwards to keep him, and I wouldn't even try exceptionally hard to keep him. So, you know, if you give him some sort of tender or whatever and somebody else wants him, they can have him. But I don't mind having him on the team just to keep you from being forced into spending like a day three draft pick or, you know, finding somebody that you hope can snap. Because as much as I don't like Aaron Brewer, I mean, I don't dislike him that much. I just don't think he should be a starter. But I really don't want Daniel Munyer to come back and snap. So, like, I've seen the other side and seen how bad that can look.
Yeah, fair. I agree. David Long is up next. I would pay him. Like, I think he's a hell of a player.
Yeah, like, so Mike Vrabel called him out in his post-game press conference. Like,
weird. Just yeah, weird.
Like, him and Fulton, which, I mean, last year Fulton was, you know, incredible. Like, I mean, he was one of the best cover corners in the NFL. Like, and, you know, he had some injuries he dealt with last year, and then he dealt with some injuries this year. But, you know, he called both those guys out. And, you know, Vrabel doesn't like David Long. Like, I don't care what he says. You know, he played Rashawn Evans and Jayon Brown over him. Long should have been starting for the last 2 years, like before the, including this year, for the last 3 years. Like, you know, his rookie year, he stepped up in the playoff game and played against the Baltimore Ravens, and he was a big part of why the Titans defense was able to shut down Lamar Jackson on those two fourth down plays. And, you know, it's vivid in my mind, but the Ravens were something like 80% on converting fourth downs throughout the season, or maybe higher. Like, it just was almost impossible to stop him on fourth downs, and he was involved in both of those plays. So, you know, that he's always been somebody who's looked like he should start. But, you know, seniority and the Mike Vrabel stuff, like, he ended up having to wait and play special teams and do it. Same thing Monty Rice is going through right now. But, you know, having said that, you know, if he does somehow get over whatever that is, David Long is a really good player. I mean, exceptional. And the caveat with every player on the Titans roster is when he's healthy. But over the last 2 years, there's only one guy that's been healthy, and it's been Kevin Byard. So you kind of have to take it with a grain of salt. But, I mean, I would keep him for sure unless he saw that Roquan Smith deal and decided that he thought he needed $20 million a year too. Because that's not the type of guy he is. Like, you can pay him a good contract and a moderate contract, but he'll be one of the better starting linebackers in the NFL. But he's not the kind of guy where you're like, he's going to be, you know, a Pro Bowler or an All Pro every year because he's so dependable and he does everything right. Like, he wins because he's so athletic, and when he triggers on something, he's do or die going to make that play. But sometimes he bites on things he shouldn't, and that hurts him. And he's not quite the cover linebacker you want him to be. He's not bad, but, like, he's not like Keekly, and that's unfair because nobody is. But, like, he's not one of these perfect linebackers that you're like, this is a guy that deserves to be paid at the top of the market. But I don't think he thinks that either, or at least that's what my expectation is. And I think he's seen Rashawn Evans and Jayon Brown both go to the market and get almost nothing in terms of deals. And I think maybe that will help him realize that the linebacker market is not exceptionally strong. And so it makes more sense to stay in Tennessee, you know, good tax situation, a team that knows what to do with you, and you just stay home and figure something out there. But it's for as good as he is when he's on the field, I don't think I would break the bank for him.
I think I agree. I think anything more than like $8 million per year, I'm probably out on. But there were times where he was legitimately the Titans' best defensive player and legitimately led them as a unit. So it would be a tough guy to let go. But like you said, it seems like Vrabel doesn't even like him. So wouldn't be surprised if that's the case. Two more players to round out this list. I'm going to start with Naquan Jones. He's an exclusive rights free agent. I'm not totally sure what that means, but I think they'll bring him back, right?
Yeah, I think it means
competition.
Yeah, like, I think it means that you can kind of say, like, we want him. Like, I don't really understand what it is either. I shouldn't pretend like like, there's some restrictive quality there that makes it like, if you want him, there's like a pre-negotiated deal or whatever that you can say, like, we want to pay him $800,000. And, like, it's almost like a built-in kind of franchise tag. That's my understanding of it. That could be completely wrong, so don't quote me on that. But that's the understanding I'm working with. So, yeah, I would bring him back just because there's been different times over the last couple of years where he's flashed as a pass rusher. And, you know, Vrabel said it well in his postgame press conference, where he was talking about Jaden Peavy, who's an undrafted free agent defensive tackle that they had this year from, I believe, Ohio State. And he said, or Texas A&M or something, one of those. And he said, you know, there's another Jaden Peavy coming out next year that we're going to sign as an undrafted free agent. So if you're not working to get better, then you have to know that there's going to be a guy breathing down your neck. And, you know, like that, maybe the Titans can do it just in general, but Robinson was great at finding undrafted free agent defensive linemen that could come and plug in and be, you know, passable players and stop gaps and not hurt you. So, and then you get guys with upside like a Tier Tart. So we'll see if the next GM can do that too. But the bigger point is that I would keep him for a small non-guaranteed price. And then the understanding being you're not promised anything. Your job can be taken away. And if he continues to develop, then I think he'll be, you know, a good deal at that price. If he doesn't, you just cut ties and go.
And last but not least, the toughest decision the Titans are going to have to make, Dennis Daly.
Oh, hard pass, obviously. I thought, is Dobbs not on that list?
No, I don't know why, yeah, actually. Maybe SpotRac is wrong. I don't know, to be honest with you. But, I mean, I would bring Dobbs back, for sure.
Yeah, Dobbs is a weird one, because I think you absolutely have to bring him back. Like, I think, if nothing else, you have to bring him back and consider a three quarterback room situation. And then, you know, maybe somebody gets hurt in training camp, but, you know, like I don't wish this would happen, but it's like, if Malik gets hurt, then you don't have to worry about, oh, did we cut bait too soon on this guy? Like, you know, if somebody else, you know, or if Malik gets hurt, you get to keep him without saying, did we cut bait too soon on Dobbs, who could have helped us as the number two because we wanted to develop this other guy. So I think you just have to, after what he did the last two games.
Agreed. You didn't tell me about Daly. That's a yes, right, on resigning?
Oh, sign him. Yeah. Yeah, because he can't play left tackle, but he can probably be right tackle. Or offensive coordinator. I mean, like, he's equally as competent as the guy they had there. So, I mean, he's got – there's a lot of things you can do with Dennis Daly. I mean,
maybe – Dennis Daly, O-line coach.
Just everybody turned the wrong way. Like, I almost did an article, like, looking back to see how many times the defensive player of the week was somebody that played against Dennis Daly. Because I feel like it was four or five times.
Yeah, terrible. So that's going to do it for the free agents. We could keep talking about players that the Titans should or shouldn't cut, but we'll save that for a future episode. We didn't even get around to a draft plan or anything because there's a lot to talk about. So we're going to take one more ad break here, and then we will wrap up with Stop the Nonsense.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome back into No Nonsense, a Tennessee Titans podcast. Will, do you have a Stop the Nonsense?
Yeah, so I've said this one, I believe I've said this exact one before, but I was going back and looking at Jim White's mailbag, and, you know, Jim White has to do what he has to do. Like, I get that. But it's funny to watch over the course of the season, and this is, I encourage everybody to go do this, to go, you know, if you can stand the pain, go back and read the mailbags each week and see people from week one, people are concerned about Todd Downing. and like this before the games are even played, and you can see the questions continue throughout the whole season. And when the Titans are doing good, he's like, you know, well, Josh, like, I'm just making up a name. Well, Josh, they're 7-3 right now. So I think everybody should be pretty happy with all the coaches. And like that kind of like, I know a lot of people are complaining about Downing, but what else did you want him to do? This, that, and the other. And then like you slowly see like that descent into like what I'll call sanity. And it's like, he's like, well, he's like that. Yeah, I didn't understand that call either. And it's like, you start to see like these little cracks in the armor, and it's like, yeah, that was a weird call, but you know, it's also could have been this. And it's like towards the end, it's just like a lot of like, thanks for your question, which is basically when I see Jim White post something, he says, thanks for your question. And it's like, Todd Downing is the worst offensive coordinator. How could this team possibly, you know, consider keeping him? It's just Jim White's way of like rebelling and saying like, I hate this guy. Like, you know, I'm going to air this and not respond to it because I can't, because, you know, I work for the Titans, but I want everybody to see this opinion, and I'm going to not combat it. And it's just, it's fun to see that arc. But then if you go back about halfway, probably when the Robinson got fired, there's two things that happen where there's kind of an uptick in Jim White defending him. And then there's also an article that comes out that's written by Buck Rising that said, you know, don't expect any changes at offensive coordinator this offseason. Like, I don't get the impression that Todd Downing is the problem with this offense, and they think it's the talent on the roster and all that. And this is a very happy, like, stop the nonsense, because it was one of those where everything was so clearly wrong and so clearly Todd Downing's fault. And I don't think we've talked about this, and I don't have the exact stat, but there was something like in the Jaguars game, they had 20 first downs where they ran the ball and 4 where they passed it. And it's sort of this culmination of, you can see where they almost made the worst decision possible and kept Todd Downing. But luckily, at the very end, that their poor play calling and stupid decision making finally forced the Titans to look themselves in the mirror and figure out what was wrong. And then they could see their own nonsense to the point where they were like, okay, we have to fire Todd Downing. So this is a very happy and positive stop the nonsense, because they actually did. They stopped the nonsense because they just kept downward spiraling until they couldn't ignore it anymore. So all of the previous defenses and excuses made like were washed away, and it was very therapeutic. So now that there's some finality to the situation, I feel like that's a good one to share.
Positive stop the nonsense. This is what we should all strive for in 2023. Mine's not negative, but I have two, actually. I thought I didn't have any, but then I remembered a couple of things that happened today. One of them is Brandon Staley, just colossal moron of a head coach, thinks he's smarter than everyone else. I don't know if any of you guys saw, but in Week 18, the Chargers played the Broncos in a game that was literally meaningless. They played at in the afternoon. Their seeding was already locked. They were locked into the 5 seed. They couldn't get better. They couldn't get worse. What does Brandon Staley do? Trot out his starters to play for, I think it was 3 quarters or something like that. What happens? Joey Bosa gets injured in that game. I think he'll be fine for this weekend's matchup against the Jaguars. Mike Williams also gets injured in that game. Mike Williams, who is frequently injured with nagging injuries, he gets seriously injured. He has a fracture in his back, is out for 2 to 3 weeks, totally out of the Jaguars game. His season might be over because the Chargers might not even play more than one playoff game. So great job, Brandon Staley. Way to go. This is the same guy who played Justin Herbert with cracked ribs for 4 quarters when they played the Jaguars the first time, which they lost 38-10. They were down 4 scores, and Justin Herbert was still out there. I mean, this dude has zero logic. Zero logic. I don't know. I don't know what he's doing. And then, oh man, sorry, my water almost fell. That was really dumb. And then another head coach who, I don't know what's up with him. John Harbaugh is doing some weird stuff. with this Lamar Jackson situation. I don't know what's going on over there. But today, Lamar Jackson came out with a tweet, I think it was either today or yesterday, saying that he has a PCL sprain, grade 2 sprain, almost grade 3. That's why he hasn't been able to play. Still, his knee is still like kind of weak, so obviously he can't risk it. And they keep asking John Harbaugh about it. Today, they asked him about Lamar Jackson's tweet. He says, "No, I didn't know anything about that and didn't pay much attention to it." Says he can't comment on the specifics of Jackson's injury. I don't know what's going on, but if the Titans want to go ahead and make a quick phone call to the Ravens and engage the trade interest for Lamar Jackson, feel free. Would love to have him in Tennessee run the ball with Derrick Henry.
Yeah, so the common thread between these two is coaches who seem to misunderstand the situation. With the Ravens, it was, you know, we're not afraid to play chicken. Like this, you know, going back to the preseason, it's like, we're not afraid to play chicken with Lamar Jackson. Like if he doesn't want to sign a deal, we're not, you know, we're not going to do a deal in the middle of the season. And that's just the end of it. And it's like, okay, well now you're here. So, you know, he's going to sit out your whether he's that injured or not, nobody knows. You know, maybe he is. Like nobody's seen him. You know, he's not showing up, and you know, there's no pictures or anything like that. I'm not saying he's not, but I'm saying like, you can speculate one way or another. And the only reason there would even be this speculation because the Ravens didn't pay a guy that they believed was their franchise quarterback, theoretically. So, you know, now what do you do? Because if you pay him now, you show everybody that you were just playing hardball and that you believe in him the whole time, but you also look stupid for not paying him earlier. And then if you don't pay him, what are you going to do? Franchise tag him and trade him? Or, you know, are you just going to let him walk because he won't sign a franchise tag? Like, you know, that's another terrible situation. And then the Chargers just deciding to play, because the Titans have the worst injury luck in the NFL over the past two seasons. The Chargers have the worst injury luck historically in the NFL. Like, they're just constantly a banged-up team. And their receivers have always been very, like, very breakable. So, you know, Keenan Allen, I think, missed time early this year. I think Mike Williams did, too, if I'm not mistaken. And so, like, you know, you talked about Herbert, you know, them letting him play with, like, cracked ribs or cartilage or whatever that was, like, against the Jaguars the last time they played. And then Bosa got hurt, and they didn't really understand how to treat it, and he's finally back, it seems like. But, you know, I get that whole lifestyle is we want to be aggressive, but, again, you got to know the situation you're in. Like, it's okay sometimes to admit that a game doesn't matter. And Mike Vrabel has the same problem. If there's a small sliver of something that it might help, you know, it's everybody all out. Thankfully, the Dallas game didn't have, you know, anything to play for, and he sat a bunch of the guys, you know, not that it mattered either way, but it's like these coaches have to understand when it's okay to like pull off the gas late in the season. Like week 3, I get it. Week 17 or 18, when there's nothing to be gained from playing your starters. I mean, if a wide receiver sniffs too much, I'm putting him on the injury report as illness and I'm not playing him. So it's just upsetting how stupid some teams can be and still stumble into the playoffs when the Titans are supposedly as careful as they can be and they're still setting historic numbers of injuries.
Yeah, now I have to decide whether to root for the Chargers or the Jaguars. Like, this is my personal hell.
Easiest thing in the world.
It's the Chargers, right? It's the Chargers.
Yeah, you absolutely root for the Chargers, and you hope that Bosa just reclaims that he sacks Trevor Lawrence by the hair and like just like parades him around. Like you hope they dominate them.
The Jaguars don't deserve to be there, man. I'm sorry. I know they beat us, but they don't deserve to be there. They really don't.
By the way, the Jaguars,
for that freaking fumble.
The Jaguars are the same team. I mean, like, not the same team, I shouldn't say, but they made the same mistake the Chargers did. They shouldn't get punished for it.
I know. Yeah. I remember.
Like, they played all their starters. Like, they're the least injured team in the NFL, and they played all their starters in a game that didn't matter the week before they played the Titans, and it didn't bite them, but it's still a stupid decision. And so, like, they deserve to be punished for that, but we'll see what happens.
We'll see. We'll be back next week, I think, maybe the week after, to recap some of the games, some of the goings-on around the NFL and the playoffs, and talk about the upcoming draft and some more Tennessee Titans things, as I assume they'll hire a GM within the next 2 weeks, probably. It really shouldn't take too much longer. They really shouldn't wait too much. So we'll see what happens, and once we get some news, we'll be right back to talk about it. So for Matias, for Will, thanks for tuning in, and remember to always stop the nonsense.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.